Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you, thank you, thank you for holding on. Well, I think we've had a fabulous night tonight. We know we had Jason Robb on first hour. He did a really good job. He works really well with Will Franklin. And you know what? We got a phone call. I had tried to contact General Nick Glastovic about 10 days ago. Hadn't talked to him in a long time. And lo and behold, we got a phone call from him about an hour before showtime today. And I've spent a lot of time to try to get back with him. We were very fortunate. We got General Nick Glastovic on the second hour. Totally unprepared, unscripted interview. We had Will Franklin came out. Will did a great job. He's young, got a great memory better than mine. He's got a great, a wonderful grasp of history. But I tell you what, I just want you to know, you should, Blood River Radio family, you should feel blessed, so to speak, or fortunate to have somebody like General Nick Glastovic on. I told you about his resume. Just, I don't know anybody has resumes can beat that. But we have another tough SOB coming on here. He's I won't say what's been going on because he may not want me to, but he is a tough SOB. I'm telling you, he's an old jarhead, and you know how they are. But they're tough. Some of them ain't got no sense, but they tough as hell. But anyway, the jarhead wears many hats. He wears the jarhead hat. He wears the bitter ender hat. He wears the professor hat, and he wears the hat of the destroyer of the best swords money can buy. Anyway, we have this man we're talking about, the bitter ender, the still bitter, more bitter than ever, bitter ender on. He's going to be wearing his professor hat tonight, I believe. How you doing, Bitter Ender?
Doing great, Eddie. Doing great. Merry Christmas out there to all of our listeners. I hope everybody has a good celebration this week. And I thought on our Confederate Hour, we want to talk about three battles that Lincoln forced the Army of the Empire to fight, not really for military strategy, but for political reason. And we'll get back to that in just a minute. But I thought since Christmas is coming up this week, we ought to prove how we embrace diversity and equality, and we here at Blood River Radio believe that we're all the same. We, you know, DEI, yes, and all of that. And so I thought we would have the Christmas story presented in Ebonics. It's called The Night Before Christmas. And I thought I'd get all the little Miller nieces and nephews around the tree, and old Uncle Gene is going to recite The Night Before Christmas for all the children. And I can't remember all of it. We'll get most of it. And it says, "Was the night before Christmas, and all through the hood, all the druggies had passed out. They were all knocked out good. And me and my old lady done passed out in the bed while Thunderbird and Ripple done tore up our head. When out on the lawn, I dropped open my jaw. There's so much noise, I says, gee, this must be the law. And now down through the years, Santa, he'd be white. Well, we done got ourselves a black Santa Claus this night. And he was riding in a giant watermelon pulled by eight wharf rats. And he whistled and shouted and called them on by name. He says, on Leroy, stagger Lee, and they was all pulling like the same. So he come to my house. He didn't come down no chimney. He picked a lock on my door, and I says to myself, gee, he done this before. And he didn't leave no presents, but he took all my burglar tools, my VCR, and the fuzzy dice that hangs in my car. I know what he's doing, because all my stuff be hot, and he go to exchange it for stuff that was not. So he took off out of the house and gave them wharf rats the switch. He took my stuff, and I said, that stealing son of a... Next year, I hope a white Santa we get... Because this year, Black Santa, he wasn't worth a shit. Okay, so that's the Ebonics Christmas carol about Christmas. So with that, and I'm sure everybody's in the Christmas spirit now for Christmas coming up this week. We wanted to talk about something. Maybe we can get a little bit serious here. We want to talk about three battles that Lincoln forced the federal armies to fight in December. And it really didn't have a military strategy to it at all. If they were successful, great. But they wanted to fight three battles to emphasize what he had done. We back up a few months to the summer and fall of 1862, and the Union Army in the Eastern Theater of the War were just beating like a drum. Robert E. Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia clobbered McClellan down on the peninsula in the 7 days battle, and they turned around and came up to Manassas Junction. Thomas Stonewall Jackson marched around John Pope and destroyed his supply depot at Manassas Junction, and the Yankees had attacked against Jackson all day. The Confederates were dug in behind this railroad embankment. And just about the time they were running out of ammunition and late in the afternoon, James Longstreet's corps from the Army of Northern Virginia came on the field and caught Pope's army in a flank attack and just destroyed Pope's army. They couldn't run fast enough to get back to D.C. So Lee had decided that, all right, we've got them on the run. We can never fight and win a war of attrition. We've got to take the Confederate army across the Potomac, win a battle on northern soil, and turn on their capital at Washington and try to get a peace settlement. So Lee's army, late August, early September, marched across the Potomac River into Maryland. They were headed for the coal fields in Pennsylvania to destroy a part of the Yankee industrial complex there and bring the war home to the civilians. Unfortunately, an officer in the Confederate army got careless. And he had a copy of the orders wrapped around three cigars, stuck it in the pocket of his coat, and lost them. So after the Confederate Army pulled out of Hagerstown, Maryland, the Yankees fell in behind them. And as luck would have it, one of the Yankee officers that found this order recognized the handwriting because he and the officer that had written it out had been classmates at West Point. He knew it was authentic. He took it to McClellan. And finally, McClellan stopped his slow plodding along, careful, look behind every tree, don't take two steps unless it's fortified, and move quickly to catch up to Lee's army that was split up. And, you know, you say, well, why would you split your army? You cannot have an army march along a single road. If they had strung out the army in Northern Virginia, it would have been in Maryland, and the other end of the army would have been down in North Carolina. So you have to split these large armies up on several different roads or routes and then have a central point where they're going to come back together. So that's what McClellan had. He knew Lee's army was split up. So he started moving quickly. Jeb Stuart's cavalry were holding the passes in South Mountain there in Maryland, and they knew something was wrong if McClellan was moving that fast. They found out that through rumors and civilians that McClellan had a copy of the orders. That's why he was moving. Lee pulled his army back out of Maryland to a town called Sharpsburg, just barely across the Potomac River, to make a stand against McClellan. And they fought what has been termed the bloodiest day's battle on American soil at Sharpsburg in September of 1862. It was a drawn battle. McClellan's army outnumbered Lee over 2-1, but he couldn't coordinate the attacks. And they would start at the northern end of the Confederate line, and then move down to the middle and finally the southern end. And finally, A.P. Hill's division came up from Harper's Ferry and caught the Yankees at Burnside's Bridge and just destroyed the last federal attack. And the battle died at the end of the day. But Lee decided that this was not a good place to be in, fighting an army that much larger than you, and you're back to the Potomac River. And so the next day, they stood there waiting for McClellan the next day. He was too beat up to do anything. So the next night, they slipped back across the Potomac River. It was more or less a drawn battle, but at least it wasn't a loss for Lincoln and the Empire. So after the battle at Sharpsburg, Lincoln issues his Emancipation Proclamation to go into effect on January 1st, 1863. And this is where people that know very little about history, like most of our news commentators, say, oh, well, Lincoln freed the slaves. No, he didn't. This emancipation really didn't free any slaves at all. The 13th Amendment went into effect in 1865, was the document that freed the slaves. And heck, Lincoln was already dead and burning in hell by then. He didn't free the slaves, the 13th Amendment did. But this, and even Lincoln said so himself, this was a political move. The political move was to claim that the wonderful, heroic, loving U.S. Army was fighting to free the slaves, which automatically meant that whoever's fighting against them must be fighting to maintain slavery. And the South wasn't. They said over and over again, we'll end slavery. You pay the slave owners for what they did, for what they had invested in the slaves, and we're glad to get rid of it. But, of course, the Yankees weren't going to pay any money. Mr. Yankee didn't want to give a dollar. And so it had the effect of keeping England out of the war on the side of the Confederates, because England had abolished slavery in the 1830s. I've forgotten exactly what the year was. But they did what the South asked the federal government to do. And we'll come back to that right after the break.
Can't wait to hear that, Gene. Be right back, folks.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Dear Blood River Radio family, real power is something you take. The one and only, Frank Hoatt from up in the north of the Mason-Dixon line sent me that clip not long ago, so we went ahead and put it in there with our Blood River Radio repertoire. But anyway, I don't want to take any more time of the general here in West Tennessee. A general, the bitter ender himself, the still bitter, more bitter than ever, bitter ender. Go ahead, bitter ender. I hope I didn't deter you too much.
No. And we were talking before the break about Lincoln's issuing the Emancipation Proclamation, which led to these three battles in December that we're going to talk about in a little more detail. And the Emancipation Proclamation, people need to know, this was an executive order. It was not a law passed by Congress. It's just like all the executive orders that Biden issued or Trump. And I mean, Trump could issue an executive order that's great, but it only applies not to the United States, but to Communist China. And how is he going to enforce an executive order in Communist China? You know, he issues it and they say, you go away, yellow hair, we no do that. So this was another one of those executive orders. And it says it applied, and this is from the quote of the Emancipation, it applies only to those states in rebellion against the Union. In other words, the Confederate states. It exempted the states in the United States that were still in the U.S. government. So the states of Delaware, Maryland, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Missouri, they were slave states, they were exempted. They could keep their slaves. There was no argument there. It was only those states that had voted to leave the Union where this law applied. And not only that, the emancipation exempted territory that was occupied by the U.S. Army. And it even listed the parishes in Louisiana that were exempt. And I couldn't figure that out for the longest time. And then I heard a historian tell me, oh, yeah, that's the sneaky way the Yankees operated. Said, if those areas were exempted and the U.S. Army were there, that meant that those slaves in that area were not free, and they considered them to be contraband of war or property of the enemy. So they could go into an area and declare slaves as contraband of war, go in and grab them and drag them into the Union Army and make them do all the nasty, dirty work that the white Yankee soldiers didn't want to do. They had to dig the latrines and clean up after the horses and mules and be burial details and all that sort of thing. So it shows you how hypocritical Lincoln and the federal government really were. But that being said, I would urge our listeners to get a copy and actually read the Emancipation and see what it says, because all the news nerds on TV and The View and your buddy, your investigative reporter buddy there at Channel 5 in Nashville, they think this is came down with the Ten Commandments with Moses, and it's that great a document, but it's not. It's just political hype. So Lincoln issued this. It was to go into effect on January 1st, 1863. So Lincoln ordered the three major armies to launch campaigns against the Confederates and to emphasize the importance of his great Emancipation Proclamation when these smashing victories against these evil, horrible Southern rebels. One of the first battles we're going to talk about was at Fredericksburg, Virginia. He wanted the Army of the Potomac to launch an offensive campaign against Robert E. Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia. He wanted them to take Richmond, Virginia by January 1st. So Ambrose P. Burnside was the commander of the Union Army, and he wasted time, didn't know what to do, couldn't decide on this, couldn't decide on that. He delayed crossing the Rappahannock River for over 3 weeks. Now, he had an army of over 130,000, and Lee's army was just about half that size. Burnside delaying, he allowed Lee to, and of course, now Lee had to spread his army out all over Northern Virginia. They didn't know where the Yankee army was going to go. But once Burnside moved down to the Rappahannock River and got ready to cross at Fredericksburg, they knew exactly where it was going then. So Lee pulled his army together, the two army corps of James Longstreet and Thomas Stonewall Jackson and the cavalry under Jeb Stuart, and they were spread out for 20 or 30 miles on either flank of the army. So just in case Burnside tried to cross somewhere else. They finally decided, nope, he's putting pontoon bridges across the river. He's going to cross at Fredericksburg. So the Confederates fixed their defensive positions up on hills behind the town of Fredericksburg and waited for Burnside to get his army across. On December the 13th, 1862, Burnside launched his attacks against the Army of Northern Virginia. The Army of Northern Virginia only had about 75,000. As we said, Burnside was about 130,000. But the Confederates had concentrated about 300 pieces of artillery in their army on these heights above Fredericksburg. And they had interlocking fields of fire. In other words, the artillery shells were crossing each other as they were hitting this field down there. Lieutenant Colonel Porter Alexander, who was in charge of the ordnance for the Army of Northern Virginia, and if you saw the movie Gods and Generals, this quote was in there. So Lee asked him, said, Colonel Alexander, is your artillery ready? And said, oh, yes, sir, General. He said, a chicken couldn't cross that field alive out there. And it was a total slaughter. Ambrose P. Burnside couldn't coordinate the attacks. They were thrown in there piecemeal. The Confederates were on these hills behind Fredericksburg or to the west of the river there. And the strongest position was Longstreet's troop. They were in a sunken road behind the stone wall. And it was an impregnable position. And they just mowed the Federals down as they came up the hills there. They said after the battle, the Confederates looked down on this plain of ground below them, and it said it looked like thousands and thousands of worms, blue worms, were just twisting and turning out there. And even the Confederates had sympathy for the Yankee soldiers who had been shot to pieces. So this also was in that movie, Guns and Generals. Robert Duvall did a tremendous job of playing Lee in that. That's one of the greatest portrayals of Robert E. Lee I've ever seen. And he, when I saw that movie, I mean, it literally brought tears to my eyes, because the script wasn't written by some goofball Hollywood scriptwriter. They used the exact words that Lee and Jackson and Stuart and all of these generals had used. So after this battle, Lee is overlooking the field there with his staff and his officers, and he just shook his head, and his quote was, "It is well that war is so terrible, or we should grow too fond of it." The losses for the Federal Army were about 12,600, and for the Confederates, it was a little under 5,000. So that stopped Burnside's attempt to win a great victory for Lincoln's emancipation in Virginia and in the Eastern Theater. Now, out here in the Western Theater, they decided that Grant was going to launch his overland campaign to come down through the central part of the state of Mississippi and capture Vicksburg, the big Confederate forts and fortifications up on the bluff there on the Mississippi River at Vicksburg, Mississippi. He was coming overland, except a lieutenant colonel that they'd never heard of, a colonel, Nathan Bedford Forrest, crossed the Tennessee River up at Clifton, got into West Tennessee and destroyed the Mobile and Ohio Railroad, burned up his supplies, cut telegraph lines. And then Earl Van Dorn, another Confederate cavalry officer, raided in behind Grant at Holly Springs, Mississippi, and burned his huge supply depot there. In fact, he missed capturing Mrs. Grant by about 15 minutes. Just by chance, she had left before the Confederates came roaring into town. So Grant had no supplies. So he turned around, his first attempt to take Vicksburg, he turned around and went skedaddling back to Memphis. They sent the other half of the army that was going to take Vicksburg under William T. Sherman, and the Federal fleet was sent down the Mississippi River to take Vicksburg from the north at the Yazoo River. And the Federal fleet, now this battle that we're going to talk about is called Chickasaw Bayou. And that was the location where the fighting took place. And so on the 27th of December, they unloaded the Federal troops there on the Mississippi River, and they started to fan out and head inland to get around Vicksburg on the north. They weren't going to try to attack the fortifications with what they had. Sherman and his army had about 31,000. John Pemberton and the Confederates had about 14,000. And one of the brigades, and Pemberton had two brigades from Mississippi and Louisiana, but he had one more from Tennessee. And the part that I was really interested in this battle, in one of the brigades from Tennessee was the 50th Tennessee Infantry Regiment. And in that 50th Tennessee Infantry Regiment, Company H, was Corporal Henry Hicks McGee, my great-great-grandfather. Wow. And so he was there with that army that fought at Chickasaw Bayou, and a great-great-great uncle, Captain Elbert Sexton, was the company commander for Company H, and he was my great-great-great uncle. So I had two of my relatives that I know of were in that 50th Tennessee that fought at Chickasaw Bayou. So anyway, Sherman and all the Yankees are unloaded there on the banks of the river, and they have to make their way through this swamp to get through the Confederates up on Chickasaw Bluffs, or they were also called Walnut Bluffs. And so they were spreading out through all of this terrain and mud and swamp water. The only way they could get out of there was to get up on a causeway that was built up again above the swamp. But when they got on that causeway, they were all packed in there together. And the Confederates that were waiting up on the bluffs had basically a target shooting practice, because when they fired down that road, there was no way they could miss the Yankees. And we'll come back and finish up the battle at Chickasaw Bayou, 27-29 December, 1862.
Dead Yankees are good Yankees. Be right back, folks.
Proclaim. proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from Town Hall, I'm Mary Rose. As Congress heads home for the annual Christmas break, U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson says the GOP has multiple proposals waiting when lawmakers return, which will address spiraling health care costs. On the Salem News program this week on Capitol Hill with Tony Perkins, the Louisiana Republican says while, in his words, Democrats broke the health care system, he's committed to fixing it.
The challenge has been with the margins so small here, the majority so small, no Democrats have ever been willing to help us on any of that. They broke the system, they doubled, tripled down on it, and they haven't allowed us to do it. So we're using, even though we have a small margin, we'll have a one-vote margin in the Republican majority from January to April until a seat is filled in Georgia. We're going to still, even with that small margin, hold everybody together, stay unified, and get these things done. It must be done for the American people.
Speaker Johnson's full interview will be heard this week on Capitol Hill. GOP strategist Aaron McGuire says there's no question congressional Republicans have a lot of hard work ahead before the midterm elections.
Congress is actually in the hardest place it has been in a very long time, looking at this short runway to the end of the year and a number of big things to try and clean up along the way.
President Trump says drug companies have agreed to reduce prices on some pharmaceuticals.
They've agreed to offer many of their flagship drugs, really all of their flagship drugs, at heavily discounted most favored nations prices. In other words, whatever the drug sells for over the world, in the world, whatever the lowest number is, if it's Germany, if it's in UK, anywhere, we will match that price.
The prices apply for medications treating a number of chronic conditions, including diabetes, arthritis, HIV, asthma. More on these stories at townhall.com.
In today's fast-paced world, professionals face endless projects, deadlines, competition. To thrive, you need mental clarity, sharp focus, and reliable memory. That's why the same company that brings you Relief Factor created ThinkFactor. ThinkFactor is designed to help you think clearer and perform better daily. It's a powerful blend of nutrients that supercharges your memory and sharpens your focus. You can stay on top of your work and outshine the competition. After a couple of weeks of taking ThinkFactor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And you know what? The longer you take ThinkFactor, the better the results are. If you've ever felt mentally foggy or struggled to keep up with everything on your plate, well, ThinkFactor can help you reclaim your cognitive edge and thrive in your life. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, to order ThinkFactor. Call 800-4-RELIEF or visit ReliefFactor.com. Your first bottle, just $19.95. ThinkFactor. Think clearer, perform better daily.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand.
We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at LibertyNewsRadio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. LibertyNewsRadio.com.
In the morning. Smells like victory.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for tuning in. I'd like to say, give out a special holler out to my brother and sister Dennis and Pam Adams in Virginia, to Biscuit in the swamps of Florida, to Sasquatch in the swamps of Florida, to old Sasquatch, you know, the people. This kind of, I'm notorious for going these rabbit trails where those Sasquatch used to live. That's why we nicknamed him the Sasquatch. I won't tell his name because for obvious reasons, but he said, because his name is so ugly you can't hardly stand to say it. No, that's not what. That's not the real.
Oh,
reason.
I tell you what, if people know we're supporting Blood River, they'll get doxxed and all. Oh, they may lose their job and. They'll have reporters all over their yard squashing their flowers and running over their fence and everything. So
they sure will.
You know, it's such a rotten country. You know, if you don't agree with the empire, they turn every asset they've got against you. And
there's
no such thing as well, having a civil debate and, you know, okay, you have your opinion, we have our opinion. I don't think we're going to agree with you. I know you're not going to agree with us, and we'll just let it go. Oh, no. They're on a holy crusade. They're zealots, and they can't stop until they wipe out all of the opposition to the Communist Party and this New World Order and the Israeli First movement and whatever else they've got going in this country. They will go after any kind of opposition, and they are. They're zealots. They just want to destroy the people that oppose them. That's all it is to it.
Well, Phil Williams has, of the Nashville, I know you know, he's had a standing invitation to come on Blood River Radio and debate Gene and myself. We've got some of the questions. We have a copy of him speaking to various visitors at AMRAN a couple weeks ago. But I know you'll be shocked, Gene, but he hasn't taken up our invitation to come on this
they
radio
never do.
Program.
They never do. They have a captive audience, whether TV or radio or newspaper or podcast or whatever. And they don't allow opposition, so all you get is their opinion. It's not fact, it's just opinion. And I think the Marine Corps had was saying about opinions are like certain part of the body. Everybody's got one. Nobody wants to listen to yours. We won't go into any more detail than that. I think our listening audience can fill in the details. But that's it. They have a captive audience or a media outlet, and they use that to promote their left-wing, nutcase, communist, whatever you want to call it, ideas without any opposition. And if you get interviewed by them, you have to be very, very, very careful what you say and keep it short and repeat your point over and over again. If you get into a long discussion like we have, they'll just clip out the parts they want, and they will have something put together that says, we're going to kill everybody in America that doesn't agree with us. And we never said that, but when you take and especially with this AI now, they take a clip from this sentence, a clip from that sentence, and a clip from another sentence and put it all together. And it just sounds like you're some kind of horrible monster that's out there to kill people or whatever. And that's how dishonest the media is today. It's pretty pathetic, but
well, they
you know,
know,
if you ever get interviewed by them, just keep repeating your point over and over again. So if they want something from you, the only thing they're going to get is one, maybe two sentences, and that's it.
And so, I would definitely record that conversation where if they try to turn it around, you said, no, here's the original right here.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, I'll tell you one more thing.
No, that won't do you any good because they won't give you a rebuttal. They will never let you come back and say, I didn't say that, you know, because they'll play the part they cut out or manufactured or insinuated, and they will never give you a chance to refute it. That's just the way they operate. They're chicken shit, you know. They don't have the nerve to get in an honest, open debate, and that's why he'll never come on Blood River Radio.
Oh, no.
That's never going to happen.
We've invited him. This is like two years in a row. We've invited him to come on, but that sorry coward son of a bitch will not come on.
No, one more thing about
Those Sasquatch. He said the place he was living before he moved, he worked these weird hours, and so people never saw him. So they said it's the Bigfoot Sasquatch must be living over there. So that's how we that nickname stuck. We've been calling him the Sasquatch.
But yeah. All right.
I wish we could get old Phil Williams on here, but I'm sure he wants to come. But I'm sure he's going to come. He just hadn't been able to dial that number yet.
He got palsy in that hand. He can't dial with it. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
I had an uncle one time play professional baseball. He'd talk about people go out to dinner and somebody wouldn't pick up a check. He said, "Yeah, he's got palsy in that hand. He can't get that check when it came to the table."
I know a few folks like that. I know you do.
Oh, we all do. Okay, we're going to get back to our December battles. Talked about the Battle at Fredericksburg, 13 December 1862. One thing we skipped over there, we forgot to give our listeners the losses in the battle. Now, Ambrose P. Burnside had and that's where the term sideburns came from, because he had those big furry whiskers that came down the side of his face and looped around and came up and made a mustache. So sideburns came from Ambrose P. Burnside. So we got a lot of our terminology from Yankee officers. Joseph Hooker, another Yankee officer that was in charge of the Federal Army at Chancellorsville, he had a rather shady reputation of having quite a number of, professional women around the camp wherever he was. And so the term became Hooker's Women for sort of shady women. And then it was just shortened to Hookers. So the term for hookers, for prostitutes, came from Joseph Hooker, the commander of the Federal Army. And they deny that over and over and over again. But you go back to what people said in the 1860s, and there's no doubt about it. Hooker's women were, shall we say, less than Sunday school teachers or something like that. So anyway, we're talking about Burnside and his 130,000-man army going against Lee at Fredericksburg. The U.S. losses at Fredericksburg were 12,600 in killed and wounded. Confederate losses were just a little bit over 5,000. So you can see what a one-sided battle it was. So now we go back to what we were talking about before the break, this Chickasaw Bayou, you know, from the 27th through the 29th of December, where Sherman unloaded all of his men in a beautiful, beautiful tactical position in the swamp. And they're struggling through this water up to their waist, and it's December, and the water's cold, and they're getting their shoes sucked off in the mud. The only way they can get out of there is get up on this road, on this causeway, and head east to get away from the river and try to come around Vicksburg from the north. The only problem was that the Chickasaw Bluffs, or the Walnut Bluffs, Walnut Hills, were waiting for them, and the Confederates were posted up on those hills. And as they came up that causeway and got out into the open there to try to maneuver down to Vicksburg, the Confederates just opened up on them. And this was on the 29th of December, and they just mowed them down. That was, like we talked about, that was just a shooting gallery. And Sherman's army was about 31,000. The Confederates had about 14,000 there. And Sherman lost over, the dead were 208. He had about 1,600 that were wounded. And the Confederates lost 63 that were killed and 130 that were wounded. So that gives you a pretty good idea of what a one-sided battle this was. So what was left of Sherman's troops had to get back down this causeway and get back on these boats that had transported them there and get the heck out of that part of the state of Mississippi. So two of Lincoln's great plans to win these glorious victories in December of 1862 to back up and get political propaganda for his wonderful Emancipation Proclamation had ended in disaster. Fredericksburg in Virginia and Chickasaw Bayou in Mississippi. Now, we'll pick up the third battle that was fought in Middle Tennessee. And William Rosecrans was the Union commander in Nashville, and he was thinking they were going to just settle down in Nashville and have winter quarters in Nashville, which wouldn't be bad at all. All the Yankee officers had taken rooms in the hotels in Nashville. Now, the enlisted men were out in the field, but they had time to build winter quarters, so it wasn't quite that bad. The Confederate Army opposing them down towards Murfreesboro, Tennessee, about 30 miles southeast of Nashville, was under the command of Braxton Bragg. And Lincoln was on Rosecrans to get out of Nashville. You're an Army commander. You're supposed to fight. get out and fight and go after that Confederate army that's just about 30 miles away from you. We need a victory to emphasize this Emancipation Proclamation. Now, we had a disaster at Fredericksburg on the 13th of December. Lincoln didn't get all the information yet, but Sherman was getting his rear end handed to him down at the Chickasaw Bluffs and Chickasaw Bayou. So finally, Rosecrans decided to inch his way out of Nashville on Christmas Day, 1862. And he kind of tippy-toed down the turnpike and the railroad, keeping the railroad behind him to supply him out of Nashville, down the railroad and the turnpike towards Murfreesboro. Now, while all of this was going on, we talked about Forrest had already crossed the river, the Tennessee River, and tore up Grant's supply line and railroads, and so had Earl Van Dorn burned the supply depot in Holly Springs. Joseph Wheeler's cavalry that was attached to the Army of Tennessee did a complete circle around Rosecrans' army and got in there and cut his supply line and burned up wagons and hauled off tons of supplies and burned what was left. It was very similar to Jeb Stuart's ride around McClellan that previous June in Virginia. So we'll finish up with the Battle of Murfreesboro and the last of our three battles to emphasize the greatness of Lincoln's emancipation.
I want to find out what happened to the hookers after the break. Be right back, folks.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Dear Blood Group Radio family, this hour, his whole program has really gone fast tonight. We're in the last segment. I don't want to take up any more of the bitter ender's time. But like I said before we went on the break, I want to find out what happened to Hooker's after he got relieved of his command. I'm worth Lincoln took his hookers away from him. But anyway.
I don't know about that. That'd be an interesting topic to discuss sometime.
I know if anybody would know, it'd be the bitter ender.
the Union Army in the East, the Army of the Potomac, they went through commanders like we go through socks, or change windshield wipers or something. They started out with Irwin McDowell. He got routed off the field at First Manassas, or Bull Run, as the Yankees call it. Then they turned it over to George McClellan. He got blown off the peninsula down below Richmond, and then fought the battle at Sharpsburg. But he was so shell shocked he couldn't do anything. So they got rid of him and put Ambrose P. Burnside in there, and he got the Federal Army slaughtered at Fredericksburg. They yanked him and put Joseph Hooker, Hooker's women that we were talking about, in charge of the army. He got routed off the field at Chancellorsville. That's where Thomas Jackson marched all the way around him and struck him in the flank. They had no idea that the Confederates were coming until they were all cooking dinner late in the afternoon. They looked up, all these rabbits and quail and deer running out of the woods. And they're thinking, what in the heck is going on here? And shortly after that, they heard this high-pitched yelling, the rebel yell, and then they saw this gray wall coming out of the woods and red battle flags. And they're going, oh, we know where the deer were, why the deer were running. And they caught them. The 11th Corps of the Army of the Potomac was caught completely off guard, and they just routed them off the field. And they overran them so badly that that's what caused all the confusion. There were Confederate and Federal units all mixed together that night. And that's when Stonewall Jackson rode out past the lines to find out where his troops were. And when he came back into the lines, he came into it. He didn't come back into the same spot where he left. And that's a cardinal rule in military. Once you go out past your own lines, you come back into the same spot where you left, because they know you're out there. But he was looking around in the woods and got disoriented in the dark and came back into a point in the Confederate lines that had just been hit by Yankee cavalry. So when they heard these horses coming up the road, they didn't order halt, who goes there, anything. They figured it was the Yankee cavalry, and they just opened fire on them. And two or three of Jackson's staff members were killed. Of course, he was wounded. His horse bolted, took off the road, went under a low limb, knocked him out of the saddle. And with all this shooting, then the Yankees started firing at him. So his staff officers were laying on top of him, trying to protect him, and bullets were flying back and forth over their heads. And then, of course, they finally got him out of there and got him to a surgeon, and they amputated his left arm. It was shattered, and got a bullet out of his right hand. He survived all of that, but while he was recuperating, he caught pneumonia. And that was a death sentence back then. And about 10 days later, he died of pneumonia. So anyway, that was in Virginia. We're back out here in the fighting in the Western Theater at Tennessee at Murfreesboro. Lincoln finally goaded William Rosecrans and threatened him enough to get out of Nashville and get out there and win a glorious victory for the Union before January 1st, when this emancipation goes into effect. So he's tiptoeing down the road from Nashville to Murfreesboro. He really is not afraid some of the Confederate cavalry is going to get him. And they did. Joseph Wheeler put a raid around Rosecrans, completely encircled his army. Started on the west, came behind him all the way around to the east, destroying wagons, supplies. John Hunt Morgan pulled off a raid on Christmas Day right into Hartsville, Tennessee, up on the Cumberland River, and captured that and a lot of Federals and supplies up there. And then we talked about Forrest. Dr. Michael Bradley, who was a history professor at Motlow State University here in Middle Tennessee, wrote a great book called The Winter Raiding, and about those three cavalry raids and how it just totally messed up the Yankee planning and organization. And I asked Dr. Bradley, Dr. Bradley, they had so much success with those December raids in 1862. Why didn't they keep doing that over and over again? He said, I don't know. That's one reason why we lost the war. They couldn't see it as a guerrilla warfare or partisan warfare. The Richmond government kept thinking they can win these great big battles and make the federal government sue for peace. And we won battles, but we never destroyed the federal army to the point that they had to ask for peace. So finally, Rosecrans gets down close to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, on the 30th of December, and he goes into camp there. Bragg's army pulls up close to him and gets within just a short distance of where they are. And the armies were so close that the band started playing music to build up the spirits of their troops. And the Yankee band played Battle Hymn of the Repugnant, and the Confederate bands would answer with Dixie, and then the Yankee band would play Yankee Doo-Doo, and the Confederate bands would answer with the Bonnie Blue Flag, and, you know, there was whooping and hollering on both sides when their favorite song was played. And then one of the bands, and they don't know which one it was, started playing Home Sweet Home, which was a song that was close to the hearts of soldiers blue and gray on both sides. And that ended the concert for the night. When the last notes faded away from Home Sweet Home, that was it. Because the soldiers knew when the sun came up the next morning, they were going to be out there killing each other. Mm-hmm. So on the 31st of December, the Confederates, we'll back it up. Rosecrans planned to attack the Confederate army and drive them into the Stones River on the 31st of December at 8 o'clock. But the Confederates launched their attack at dawn. and caught the Federals off guard and blew them out of their camps and cooking breakfast and whatever they were doing, and bent the Federal Army back into a real sharp V with their backs up to the Stones River. And they couldn't finish them off. And this is where Bragg was, I think, such an ineffective commander. He could plan a battle greatly. He could train an army. He could get an army organized. But once that first shot was fired, his battle plans just melted right out of his head. And he couldn't adjust to things that were going on the field. And, you know, I'm prejudiced, of course. I admit that. I think Forrest was probably the greatest commander that was on the field, east or west. That Forrest was on the field and right in the middle of the fight. So he could tell if this unit was beginning to fall back or they weren't doing what they were supposed to do, he could ride up there and chew out the commander or praise the troops or praise the commander for what they were doing and encourage him to go on. But Bragg was sitting back in his headquarters, and he was getting reports of what was going on, but he wasn't actually there on the field. It would kind of be today like a head coach sitting up in the press box, and you need to be down on that sideline and get the feeling of your team and your players and encourage them, yes, we're behind, but we got to drive that ball 80 yards and cram it right down their throats. And that's where Forrest was. He was the head coach that was on the field right there where the bullets were flying. Now, he paid a price. He got shot 5 times during the war, but he was the one to inspire the troops. Bragg didn't do that. They wasted charge after charge after charge attacking this place called the Round Forest. And Hell's Half Acre was another thing they called it. Instead of posting their artillery there and holding the Federals down and swinging around to keep the pressure on Rosecrans and drive him into the river, they wasted half a day taking this point on the battlefield at Murfreesboro. So January 1, both armies were just beaten to pieces and bloodied and kind of took a break and were catching their breath and reorganizing. On January the 2nd, the Confederates crossed the river, went down on the Stones River on the side of the river opposite the Federals, and were going to attack across the river. The Federal Army had posted artillery along the river, so in case the Confederates did just that, when the Confederates came out of this woods and across this open field across the river, Federal artillery opened up on them. And I mean, they just like what happened to the Federal Army at Fredericksburg, now the same thing happened to the Confederate Army at Murfreesboro. The artillery just tore them to pieces. And they never launched an attack across the river. And they had to pull back. Bragg couldn't come up with a plan, anything else to do, and the losses were so heavy that on January the 3rd, he pulled back about 30 miles down toward the Duck River, south of Murfreesboro. And Rosecrans really didn't do much to win the battle. And I guess you could say he didn't lose it, but he certainly didn't do much to win it. And Bragg had pulled back and gotten away from him and took up a position south of that on a row of hills down south of Murfreesboro. And then that's what we would get into in the Tullahoma campaign that opened up the next spring that literally forced Bragg out of Tennessee with basically not even firing a shot. So Lincoln's big plans for tremendous victories at in the east at Fredericksburg, that was a total loss for the Federals. Over further west along the Mississippi River, Sherman got wiped out in along the Chickasaw swamps or Chickasaw Bayou and the bluffs there. And then Rosecrans really didn't win much of a smashing victory, but at least he didn't lose in the Federalized. That was pretty good. But the losses at Murfreesboro for the Federal Army were 1,700 killed and about 7,800 wounded. Confederates were almost as bad. They had about 1,200 killed and about 7,900 wounded. So it wasn't a great victory for the Lincoln's emancipation, but at least it wasn't a defeat. So then he, you know, toots his horn and carries on all this big stuff and proclamation, and, you know, the newspapers covered it, and I'm sure CNN was out there with all their cameramen covered it. And he issues his great emancipation proclamation on January 1st, 1863.
I bet you feel weird.
That's our Confederate history for the weekend, and we want to wish all of our listeners a Merry Christmas this week. Hope to have a safe holiday and hope to get to be with all their family. That's the most, to me, that's the most important part of Christmas. Be together with your family.
I could not agree more. You did a great job. Thank you so much, Gene. Thank you so much for reminding me it's Christmas. I'm really neglected that. But I'd like to also say Merry Christmas to all our precious Blood River Radio family members out there, to Sam and Jay and Lizzie and her husband, and people like Gene said, just have a wonderful time with your family. That's what matters most. Anyway, people, we'll probably be here next week. That'll be the 27th. Not totally sure, but anyway, be here or be square. Good night, everybody.